Good evening. Welcome to the Jamie Glazoff Show. We have a very special guest with us this evening, Dr. Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum, and Toby, distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution of Stanford University. Dr. Pipes has written 12 books, including Militant Islam Reaches America. You can visit Dr. Pipes' website at danielpipes.org. Dr. Pipes is joining us this evening to discuss the controversy recently sparked by Newt Gingrich, who on a Jewish television station called the Palestinians, quote, an invented people. Now, despite the usual suspects coming forward to denounce Newt Gingrich, the question remains, is what Newt said a historical fact? We have the main and leading expert on this issue with us today. Dr. Pipes, it is a pleasure and a privilege to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Pipes. Dr. Pipes, in the year 2000, in the Jerusalem Post, an article by you appeared, The Year the Arabs Discovered Palestine. A longer version of that article appeared a little bit earlier in the summer of 1989 in the Middle East Review. Dr. Pipes, that article substantiates what Newt Gingrich has said, and apparently 1920 is a very significant year. Can you give us your wisdom on this issue?
Sure, my pleasure, yes. Newt Gingrich said in one sentence what took me some 8,000 words. I note that first...
Can you speak up a little bit just to make sure our listeners
sure.
hear you?
Historically, Jews have the concept of Haaretz, the land, and Christians the notion of Terra Sancta, the sacred land, which refers, roughly speaking, to the area that Israel presently occupies. Muslims have no such concept. There is no notion of a Palestine, of a holy land in Islam. And there has been historically no Muslim polity, no Muslim government that specifically covered that area, the Christian and Jewish polities. Muslim. And so in 1918, when the British conquered this area and called it Palestine, it was a victory for the Zionist movement to have an area delineated called Palestine that included Terra Sancta Haaretz. The Muslims initially responded to this new notion by rejecting it. They considered themselves primarily to be Syrians. The notion of Syria, which we today ascribe to the state of Syria, historically refers to a larger area that includes the state of Syria, Lebanon, Israel, the Palestinian areas, and Jordan. It's a geographic cultural notion analogous to Scandinavia. There's never been a Scandinavia, a country called Scandinavia, but it's a cultural geographic region. It's clearly delineated. People understand what it means. Sham or Syria was likewise a historic region, and that's what the people of this area consider themselves to be: Syrians, Muslim, Arabic speaker. But this notion of Palestine exists because the people are now of this unit called Palestine, created by the British after World War I, because they had to deal with administrators and the institutions of Palestine, they reluctantly agreed to present themselves as Palestinians. It was an official, reluctant act. Between 1920 and today, the notion of Palestine has grown. It's no longer just something done in order to fit into the British imperial structure. It's now something that has a life of its own. And I don't deny that. I don't say that Palestinian nationalism is a fraud. No, it's real. Very real. But it's very clear at the same time that the notion of Palestine, Palestinian, goes back last century. And that's in this sense, Gingrich is absolutely right. Now, many of the criticisms of Gingrich have been around the fact that there are other invented nationalities. Example, Jordan.
Dr. Pipes, sorry to interrupt. I'm getting feedback from our chat room that the listeners are having a hard time hearing you. Kindly just speak up a little bit. Thank you.
Okay. There are other invented nationalities. For example, Jordan came into existence just a year later in 1921. There's no historic Jordan that goes back hundreds of years or millennia. The difference is that no one is claiming that there's a Jordanian nationality that goes back centuries and millennia. But there are people who are claiming there's such an identity for Palestinians. For example, the PLO has long said that Jesus was a Palestinian. or they argue that the Jebusites, the people of the Bible, were the first Palestinians. The Canaanites were Palestinians. And so this notion of Palestinian has been extended backwards for millennia. That's a fraud. There is no such concept. The notion of Palestinian came into existence less than a century ago.
Dr. Pipes, here's another problem. When the Palestinians do speak of a homeland, which now, I guess, you know, we're seeing historically never really ever existed, but even when they speak of a homeland, where exactly is it? It's not really in the West Bank. It's not in Gaza. Are we correct that it's in Israel? When they speak of a homeland, it really means that they want to destroy Israel.
Absolutely. The maps of the Palestinian Authority, and more broadly, the maps that you'll find in Arabic of Palestine, invariably show all of mandatory Palestine, in other words, all of Israel, is included within it. I have never seen a map in Arabic or produced by Arabs that shows a Palestine next to an Israel. Never.
Dr. Pipes, is it an exaggeration? Is it accurate to say the following, that the Palestinians were actually invented as a weapon to destroy Israel?
Well, as I said, the notion of Palestinian goes back to the First World War, the aftermath of the First World War. At that time, the term Palestine was a Zionist term. In other words, creating a unit
right.
called Palestine was an achievement for the Jewish national movement. And the Zionist movement celebrated it.
And the Muslim Arabs actually opposed it.
Right. It was the Palestine Post, the Palestine Symphony, the Palestine this, the Palestine that. And it was Zionist. But in 1948, the Zionists abandoned the term Palestine and adopted the term Israel, leaving this term available for the anti-Zionists, who then picked it up and over the years have made it their term. So now Palestinian represents anti-Israel. And indeed, again, if one looks at maps, one sees that Palestine replaces Israel.
So let me ask this then. How do we give the Palestinians a homeland when, in fact, the very existence of the Palestinians depends on destroying Israel? Is there not something incompatible happening here?
The conventional answer to that is to create a Palestine adjoining Israel, the so-called two-state solution, which is the policy of the U.S. government and, reluctantly, the policy of the Israeli government, and also, formally speaking, the policy of the Palestinian Authority. I would say that that is not feasible. That were there to come into existence a Palestine that's made up of the Bank or the West Bank and Gaza, it would be primarily devoted to eliminating Israel. It would not be a good neighbor. It would not be. The rulers of this statelet would not be content with what territory they're given. They would be wholly engaged in eliminating Israel. And therefore, it's not workable. What's the point?
Yeah, now,
let's be realistic.
Now, Dr. Pipes, a lot of people do not know this, but inside this whole charade, inside this whole lie about the Palestinian people, Palestinian homeland, etc., actually the KGB's hand is involved here. Could you just briefly speak on that in the context of that people like Arafat and this whole thing, they were actually trained by the KGB, and some of this has been influenced by the KGB?
No question that the Soviets in the 60s in particular used this nascent Palestinian movement as a vehicle for their own ends. Israel was the American ally. The Soviets glummed on to this Palestinian movement and trained either in the Soviet Union itself or in Soviet bloc countries, Soviet advisors, Soviet arms, Soviet money, the PLO, yes.
Now, I recommend for all of our listeners to go to danielpipes.org and to read Daniel Pipes' article, The Year the Arabs Discovered Palestine. I mean, so many facts there that, you know, a lot of people didn't know. And, you know, I was surprised to read a few things. Dr. Pipes, I mean, you write in that article that, in fact, national sentiment was actually taught to the Arabs and Muslims by Europeans, that there wasn't even a sense of nationalism among Arabs and Muslims. Am I correct?
Nationalism is an import to the Muslim majority countries, just as, say, using forks and knives or wearing a tie.
Mm-hmm.
These are European customs, ideas, institutions that were exported to limit to the Middle East that had no historic basis. In other words, pre-modern Middle East had the family, clan, tribe on the one hand, and the world of Muslims, the Ummah, the, mm-hmm. the community of Muslims on the other hand. So one rather small, tribes can be large, and the other quasi-universal. There was no allegiance to the state. In other words, there were always states. Take Egypt. Egypt is a state that goes back thousands of years. And it's pretty much always been the same Egypt. It's like an island surrounded by desert. And Egypt has been ruled by many different leaders, dynasties. But through the Muslim period, until modern time, there's very little allegiance to Egypt or to the Egyptian government. It wasn't mm-hmm. important. It would be like for Americans, we are all living in a county. We're all residents of a county. Who will proclaim his county to be his identity? It's just a bureaucratic delineation that has no particular importance to our identity. Who would die for his county? These are not important units. Likewise, the government of Egypt had no importance. And there's no nationalism. There's no sense that Egypt is your country and your identity. And Egypt at least has a historic existence, whereas a place like Sham or Syria has no, it's just a vague notion.
Mm-hmm.
No reality, no governmental reality.
Well, this phenomenon in fact alone legitimizes what Gingrich is saying. Dr. Pipes, you say something very intriguing in your article. Quote, the primacy of Palestinian nationalism could eventually come to an end, perhaps as quickly as it got started. What do you think about that today, 12 years later, after writing that article?
I see identities in the Middle East as fluid. That in one era, one is Egyptian, another one is Arab, third one is Muslim, and likewise with people who we're now calling Palestinian. Hamas, for example, doesn't particularly emphasize Palestinian nature of the Gaza mm-hmm. that it rules. It emphasizes the Islamic nature. So I can imagine that the drive towards a Palestinian state having failed, the people call themselves today Palestinians would rather lose interest, could take up some other identity.
Hmm.
There's fluidity. There are alternatives. It changes. For example, the drive against Zionism has had four different natures over the last century. It was, until 1943, primarily pan-Syrian, that was Sham, and until 1967, primarily pan-Arab, the idea that Arabs from Iraq are part of a single state. Then it was Palestinian in the sense of the flag and the country, Palestine. And now there's a fourth dimension, which is Islamic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's extremely complex. Things are fluid. These are not fixed identity. They change over time. And you take a country like Jordan, extremely complex, that you have the East Bankers and the West Bankers, Bedouin, Palestinian, relationship between them. King is a Bedouin, queen is a Palestinian. The military is, and the security forces are Bedouin. Commercial leadership is Palestinian. Very complex.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Pipes, Gingrich is taking a lot of heat here. I mean, we live in a world where you simply can't say the truth. He's being attacked. But at the same time, is it not true that within the PLO charter, within the statements of many Arab leaders and even Palestinian leaders, this also has been admitted over the years?
Yes, many, many Palestinian.
Can you give us an example of maybe something in the charter or maybe some things that the leaders themselves have said or boasted about?
I can't give you an exact quote, but I did write a book called Greater Syria, The History of Ambition, that came in 1990, which is replete with quotes by Palestinian leaders who acknowledge that the Palestinian identity is of an invention. It was something that was useful at a certain time and place. Really, Palestinians, really they are Arab. Really they are. Yeah, there are plenty of. I'm sorry, I don't have any.
Dr. Pipes, is Palestinian nationalism in the end just anti-Zionism?
Interesting question. Palestinian, the short answer is yes. The very word Palestinian, as noted before, began as a Zionist word, and then the Zionists left it, and the anti-Zionists picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And over again, you find that Zionist names, institutions, ideas are picked up by anti-Zionists. For example, the leader of the Zionist movement for several decades was a man called Chaim Weizmann. He was an eminent scientist, and he was based in London. And he traveled through Europe, even to the United States, to further the Zionist cause.
Mm-hmm.
Very unusual, indeed unique, unprecedented. But along a few decades later comes Yasser Arafat, who does the same thing on behalf of the Palestinians, travels the world to promote the Palestinian cause. Palestine, mandatory Palestine, there was something called the Yishuv, which was the Zionist self-government. It wasn't official. Wasn't a state, but it had an army and it had an economic arm and had a security agency and basically it had the functions of a government. And so when Israel became a state in 1948, the Yishuv was transformed easily into the function of the state. Well, you won't find that anywhere in the world except right next door today. Mm-hmm. There's a Palestinian Authority. It is not a state, but has the functions of. Or you take something like the Jewish National Fund, which bought land on behalf of the Zionist movement. There's now a Palestinian National Fund that echoes it. And even more importantly, Zionism, the very word, is about love of Zion. What is that? That's love of Jerusalem. Focus on Jerusalem as the heart and soul of Jewish religion, the geographically central. Well, what do you know? There's now a Muslim Zion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, enormous emphasis on Jerusalem, claims that Jerusalem is a central city for Islam, and so forth and so on. So, to give one example, in the year 2000, when there were negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians, there were negotiations over the Temple Mount, the most holy site for Jews, and a holy place for Muslims as well. What was so striking is that this was a religious topic, not a strategic one, not an economic one, but a religious one. And Ehud Barak, the Prime Minister of Israel, just did it on his own, consulted no one. There was a lot of unhappiness among Jews around the world who thought they should have a say, that certain parts of Jerusalem would be handed over to the Palestinians. And in contrast, Yasser Arafat traveled extensively to get opinions of other Muslims about whether he should accept this Jerusalem. So what you have then, and what I see often, is that Muslims have now developed in more Zionist passion than Jews have.
So again,
you see that the Palestinian movement is what Germans call the doppelganger, the kind of evil twin of the Zionist movement, copying it in Yemen.
Huh. Now, Dr. Pipes, we're going to go to the phone lines in a second, but I want to ask you personally, is you know, you're a leading scholar on this, you've dedicated your life to this, you're also dedicated your life to telling the truth about history, and this is not a popular truth. How did you feel with Gingrich coming out and actually bravely saying something that is not permitted in the boundaries of even academic discourse, I don't think? Was this inspiring to you?
Let me first note that I am actually a historian.
Yeah.
I have a PhD in medieval history. Well, it's always refreshing when a leading politician makes a statement like this that cuts through and creates a furor. I imagine he had no idea it would do so. I myself have been in that situation where a throwaway remark becomes the center of a little storm. But he has confirmed it, and I think it's excellent. Now, the one criticism that has some interest, I mean, historically it's clear cut that he's right, but the more interesting criticism of him is that this is not operationally useful. By talking the truth like this, were he to become president, he makes it more difficult to have Palestinian-Israeli negotiations. To which I would say, one, there are no Palestinian-Israeli negotiations underway.
Uh-huh.
And two, even more importantly, the Palestinian-Israeli negotiations that have been going on in a substantive way since 1993 have been counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
The situation was better in 1993 before the Oslo Accords than it is today. These are negotiations that are premature and falsely premised. So that his remarks might make such negotiations less.
Dr. Pipes, do you think that it was just the moment, it was just in the moment, or do you think that Gingrich was calculating something by coming out saying something like this in terms of his campaign, maybe trying to get certain support? Is there anything behind this? Is there anything behind the timing?
From my experience, I would say that this is one of those things that simply takes off.
Uh-huh.
You can never predict it. And I would not. I mean, he's a font of ideas.
Uh-huh.
A whole range of subjects. He's very much an intellectual who loves to look at situations and provide political analyses of them. And that's what he's done here. I would suspect if he looked at the record, he said this a dozen times before, and that it came. I would suspect this came as a complete surprise to him that an off-the-cuff remark of this sort, throwaway remark of this sort,
mm-hmm.
has gendered such a debate. But certainly that's what happened to me on a number of occasions. I'd make some throwaway remark, and then for the next 2 weeks, I had this firestorm around me, and I had no idea what was going on.
Huh, yeah, so sometimes it's unpredictable when a comment will take off. We're going to go to our phone lines. We have Stephen from Toronto, Canada. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Jamie.
Stephen, you have a question for Dr. Pipes?
Yeah, Dr. Pipes, knowing the Palestinians as you do, how would you regard this remark by Newt Gingrich in terms of establishing a state? Do you think they're thinking, oh my God, we should grab the best deal now from Obama, who's very sympathetic to us? Or should we just keep going on and dragging things out, hopefully to destroy Israel?
I guess you're implying on that question that this statement might make a big impact, right?
Exactly, on negotiations, yeah. On the way they view things. Like, it's not going to be business as usual if Gingrich gets in.
Well, good question. I don't think the statement itself makes that much difference. In other words, one can agree that I'm agreeing the Palestinians are invented people and saying at the same time there is a Palestinian nationalism. I recognize it. Its origins 90 years ago are not terribly important today. It is there. Fair enough. But I think what you're getting at is something larger, not this specific statement, but the fact that a Republican, and it really doesn't matter which one, other than Ron Paul, who I don't consider a Republican, that any Republican president will have a fundamentally different attitude towards Israel and the Arab-Israeli conflict, one that's far more warm towards Israel and cooler towards negotiations. And so then the question is, might the Palestinians rush and try and do something before that happens? No, I don't see it. From my point of view, as someone who's unenthusiastic about Palestinian-Israeli negotiations, who sees these as counterproductive, I'm quite pleased with Obama. Because what Obama did is make a series of mistakes which prompted the Palestinians to walk away in a huff from the negotiations, demanding more and more, being more and more unrealistic, and the whole thing has collapsed, which from my point of view is a good idea. I want to see resolution of the Arab-Israeli conflict and then go to the negotiating table. In other words, I see the goal, our goal, American goal, is having our ally, Israel, win. I want to win this war. I want our ally to win this war. I don't want to see compromise and conciliation. Palestinians want war. They want to win. But we and the Israelis have decided there's no such thing as victory. That's just kind of, making painful concessions. No. Our side should win. Palestinians should come to accept an Israel, Jewish state of Israel. No ifs or buts. And then once they've done that, then you go to the negotiating table and figure out where the boundaries are and what the rights are here and water rights and Jerusalem and refugees and so forth. So I don't want negotiations, and I'm rather pleased with Obama because he's done such a terrible job of achieving his goals that he's actually achieved mine.
So we just have two or three minutes left. We're going to go to Mark from Atlanta, Georgia. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jamie.
Mark, you have a question for Dr. Pipes.
I do, Dr. Pipes, and let me begin by just saying that I've enjoyed your scholarship over the years and I've learned a tremendous amount about the region by reading your articles. Really excellent. My question has to do with the fact that you have written and have actually quite clearly demonstrated that this Palestinian nationalism originated out of political calculus. And I'm wondering, I was somewhat disappointed in that debate when Newt responded to the obvious disdain of Diane Sawyer, that he didn't come back at her with, attacking the media. But I'm wondering, in your view, what role has the U.S. media played in promulgating and promoting this big lie that there is such a thing as Palestinian nationalism that goes back millennia?
The media have certainly been part of it. So has the academy. And to a certain extent, so has the government. The main sources of information on this topic, or most any topic, have not been accurately portraying it. The good news is that there now is alternative media, such as the very one that we're on right now, which is looking in a much more intelligent way at complex problems such as this. So there's an opening, and many, like ourselves, are taking advantage of it.
Dr. Pipes, time has come to an end. It was an honor and a privilege to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Jamie.
And thank you for all that you do, Dr. Pipes. And I hope you'll be coming back on the show soon. Thank you.
I look forward to it.
Okay, take care.
Goodbye.